Okay, so I guess we'll start from managing software bits and pieces in the previous talk. Now we are switching gears a bit to managing hardware bits and pieces and talk about the hot topic of RISC-V. A bit about me at the beginning. I'm Heiko Stübner. I work for Vrull on RISC-V stuff. And in my spare time, I'm also maintaining the Rockchip SoC support in the mainline kernel. And I have a dark past. I was a web developer for 12 years before this. So, what is RISC-V? Well, I guess most people will have heard of it. RISC-V is a so-called modular instruction set architecture. And it's a reduced instruction set. That's the RISC versus CISC differentiation. It was started in 2010 in the University of California, Berkeley, and the five in RISC-V means that it's the fifth try of them. Like there are RISC one, two, four before this. The whole thing is BSD licensed, so it's open for anybody to use and adapt, and it's targeting like every hardware size you can imagine, from microcontrollers to laptops and to even servers. And you can see there the expressive ESP32 module using a RISC-V core. There is an announced RISC-V laptop, which is more like a toy because the SoC used in it is very low powered. And I guess there are even hardware server grade CPU cores announced. So what is an ISA? ISA means an instruction set architecture, not the ISA bus for the older people among us. And it essentially, an ISA describes essentially the possible instructions a CPU can execute. For example, the first one is the load a value into a register and or add one register to another and write the result in the register. But the ISA does not specify how this is implemented. This is the so-called then microarchitecture, which companies then need to invent themselves. So also to show where the ISA lives in, essentially when you take your a common SBC like this one, it's a you have the of course the SoC, which is a little bit larger here. In this case, that's the all-winner D1, which is right now, I guess, the nearly most common cheap SoC you can use on a RISC-V board. And in the SoC normally has this nice diagram of their components for display, video, peripherals, and then the most important part of is always the CPU core. And the CPU core, in this case the T-Head C906, will use the actual CPU core, essentially implements the ISA you are using, among some other things like caches and interrupt controllers. In comparison to things like ARM, RISC-V is very modular. You always specify a very minimal basis, that's the RV32i or RV64i. It's really only an integer set of instructions and some control functions, but can't do really much. So you end up with the, for example, with the RV64iMAFD plus ZICSR plus IFENCE-I thing, which is described, for example, in device trees as the ISA string and describes the ISA. And which is also then, because the integer set is way too less featureful, they already specified this combination as G for general purpose. And the individual letters then describe extensions for specific functions. For example, M defines instructions for doing simple multiplications, which the integer set does not define at all. And you have atomic instructions and floating point and the access to control and status registers and access synchronization. And that's like the basic thing you want to actually have a somehow meaningful CPU core. Okay. The RISC-V extensions are also essentially a never-ending story, because while we had the basic extensions we had on the previous slide, the amount of extensions is growing all the time. There are tiny ones, like, for example, ZBB, ZBZ, that's instructions for doing bit manipulation in the CPU itself. But there are also like big ones, like the vector instructions or even the aged for the hypervisor, so virtualization extension. And the list is growing all the time with a lot of extensions in different states of discussion and ratification. And of course, the most interesting part on this is that when your company is designing an RISC-V CPU core, they can essentially pick the extensions they like. They can take vector, they can leave out ZBB, they can take whatever, and combine them to their liking in their core, which is essentially slightly different to other architectures where the main company then just defines a set of features. Like an ARM Cortex A53 will always have a specific set of features. Yeah. And extensions also can do a number of things. They can, like, for example, ZBB, the bit manipulation extension, just adds some new instructions. But they can also add new control registers or add bits to existing registers. So in some registers have reserved bits, and new extensions then can just define them for their own use, which always will need the discussion to actually make sure that nothing overlaps and nothing conflicts. This brings for the software system a number of interesting challenges. Because when you're compiling a program, you're always compiling it for a specific set of instructions. So which extensions are you allowing at compile time, which then will also need to be present on the running runtime system? Because when you execute an instruction that isn't supported, you will get a program abort. And yeah. So, and this, of course, as described, leads to a giant number of possible combinations. And for general distributions, the main issue is that it will most likely lead to a least common denominator effect. Because when you have a distribution like SUSE, Debian, or whatever, they want to run on the most number of boards and will never allow doing ports for this combination and that other combination of extensions. But for example, Debian will have one RISC-V 64-bit port, not 15. But when you end up in this least common denominator effect, this will always cause suboptimal performance, because of course the compiler could optimize more. To showcase this, I have a small example. When you I've picked a really easy extension, multiplication, the M extension we had previously on the slide. Like, when you have this code, a function that returns A times B, when you have the multiplication extension available, it's just the mul W instruction that executes this and returns the value in A0. when you don't have the multiplication extension, you end up with this big hunk of code, which essentially does the same, but only using integer instructions. So when your software ecosystem like does not require the M extension, you would end up with this really with this code with really really bad performance. There are also more challenges for the developers in this case. Because RISC-V is not driven by one company, but by a lot of committees and work groups, you end up with a lot of discussion, and everything takes a lot of time. Like you have the discussion period, then the extension will at some point get frozen, then ratified, and the extension really only is stable after this ratification. And then the support for example new instructions needs to go into the compiler, which then needs a release. And also new hardware can only be developed after the extension is ratified as well. So only after ratification the hardware companies can develop a CPU core, which then can get put into an SoC, which then can get put onto a board. So during development of all of this, people spend so much time in QEMU. And the interesting part on QEMU is that you also need to enable which extensions you actually want to run on your virtual system. So this dash CPU line gets very long over time. So, and of course, there's also challenges for distributions. As I said, there will most likely only one architecture port for in each distribution. Nobody wants to handle 15 RISC-V ports. There's also only one kernel image, which has the same issue. Which extensions do you enable? And when Debian did the transition from the one ARM port to ARML and ARM hard float, there was also a long discussion over this baseline to use which ports to still allow and which ports to which old ports to not allow anymore. And for example, in Debian, it's still a port and not a release architecture. And also in Debian, you see I'm coming a lot of from the Debian side. In Debian, for example, the current baseline is very generic, which is the RV64GC, which is the generic we had before, plus compressed instructions, which is thump in ARM speak. So there is really no optimization for newer extensions that could make this more performant. And as I said on the previous slide, we have also the issue of there is will only be one kernel for a distribution. In the past, in the embedded world, we often had the issue that you had one kernel per SoC or SoC family, which led to a lot of issues. When you had, for example, in the ARM32 land, you had for all these sub-architectures had their own kernel images, which led to the maintenance nightmare that essentially Torvalds also commented on back in 2011. So today we always have the one kernel image per architecture that then has to sort itself out at runtime, for example, by using device tree or ACPI or whatever. And we have these central systems for the embedded parts of an SoC. But how can the kernel adapt itself to the RISC-V specialties, because it's the most central component. It starts once and runs until the system is powered down or restarted. And especially in the Linux kernel, every improvement you can use can improve performance a lot. But we always have the same problem: which extensions can we assume are there? And in the kernel itself, there is the even more special case that some extensions are actually needed to make a system work. I have an example later on. But on other systems, enabling this extension will cause, of course, illegal instructions and cause then a hang. And the example is, in this case, cache management. All older systems were considered cache coherent. Like some magic in the SoC is handling all the cache access and the invalidation and everything. But nowadays we also have the ZigBoom extension, which defines explicit instructions for flushing, invalidating, and cleaning a number of caches. So on the one hand, you need the extension available on systems that implement ZigBoom, because they won't be cache coherent by default. On the other hand, you can't use it on systems that don't implement it, because you will end up with an illegal instruction. And of course, there are also challenges for CPU manufacturers, because the specification is the theory and is essentially makes QEMU happy and is just written on in a nice document you can read and then implement. But if the past told at least me anything, the implementation will most of the time not really be 100% accurate. Often some issue remains. And there are also special cases, like the mentioned Allwinner D1, which essentially sits between the actual official extension. For example, it implements memory types, like standard I/O memory and non-cached memory, but is different than the official SVBBMT extension, which defines this, simply because the SoC, the CPU core, was designed before the extension was ratified. Similarly, it implements cache management, but different than ZigBoom, with different instructions. And it implements the vector extension, but in the not ratified version 0.0.7.1, instead of the official 1.0. And yeah, so how would you solve these challenges in the kernel or in the systems itself? Of course, at first we need to detect what is actually there. The most central mechanism to detect the extensions in the running system is the so-called ISR string, which is living in the device tree. And this can get quite long, because you have the base string with the single letter extensions, and then with underscores there are so-called multi-letter extensions, which then implement sometimes very central, sometimes very obscure things. For example, ZB is everything bit manipulation, with a K it's crypto extensions, and there are more crypto extensions. There are vector crypto extensions, and the ISR string also gets exported to proc CPU info, and some parts also get detected via firmware, for example via device tree elements. And there is the central registers of the CPU, like the vendor ID, the architecture ID, and implementation ID, which should identify the CPU itself, except when they hopefully are not zero. Yeah. Okay. The thing about the compiler I touched on is that to use an instruction, you would always need the newest compiler that supports this instruction. So when you, but when you wait for the next GCC release to actually use an instruction, you're waiting a lot of time, and also you're limiting your the compiler you can use to compile your project. For example, the Linux kernel most of the time only requires an ancient baseline GCC or LLVM. You are allowed to use newer ones, but and generally you don't want to require like the everybody to use the newest GCC. And similar distributions and older and current SUSE release won't have a compiler with support for some new extension. And projects always will be reluctant to step up the requirement for the compiler. The alternative is to use pre-built instructions, which the kernel uses quite a lot of, where you essentially, when you are having assembler already, you're not describing the instruction itself, but like using it pre-encoded on what the compiler would create from the assembler instruction. And yeah, and the link down below is a nice JavaScript application that essentially can move from the instruction to the encoded variant and back, which helps in doing this. So okay, so how do we get the best performance? The optimal way would be doing it the essentially Yocto way, to just rebuild everything every time. Like have the newest compiler and know what system you're running on, and then build everything from scratch. Then you would get the ultimately best performance from everything. But as I said before, then we wouldn't have generic distributions. And who wants to build Chromium locally? And so the solution is to essentially implement multiple variants and selected runtime. Of course, the simplest way would be a simple conditional, which is shown on the right, which is part of OpenSSL, where they have this big if blocks where they select on what extension is available to, in this case, select the most performant routines for doing GCM GHAS calculations. So if it has ZVK and the vector length is bigger than 128, and if it also has ZVKB and or ZBB, and it gets quite a lot. Especially as this list won't be finished, because in the future we'll have probably more extensions doing different solutions. And of course also using function pointers also creates overhead in itself. I guess in the OpenSSL case it doesn't matter so much for the cost, because you have the cryptographic routine itself will take more time. But when you are in the kernel in some very central place, even resolving the function pointer will incur too much overhead. Glibc, on the other hand, brings its own mechanism to do this a bit more performantly. It's essentially also an indirect function call, the so-called ifunc, but it hides the logic from the developer and from the performance. And essentially the resolution for the for which function to use is done at the startup of the program. For example, in this case, we are selecting between a number of str string compare functions with either generic, with ZBB, and another ZBB variant. and this resolution is done once, and the program then always will call the correct strcmp function during its runtime. So, and essentially, in the program itself, you're always calling strcmp, and you don't get into contact with the whole ifunc functionality. And the Linux kernel then is sort of a special case, because while, for example, the glibc ifunc can start the program and resolve the capabilities, and then resolve the ifunc function calls as needed, the kernel is already running when it knows what's available. So this essentially limits the optimizations you can do at startup. Conditionals and function pointers, of course, work, but kernel functions like string compare and friends run so many times that performance really matters. So the way to go for the kernel is patching it at runtime. That's different than the live patching, but it's still changing the kernel code at runtime. And essentially, we have three methods to do this. The one thing are so-called static calls. A static call is essentially a function pointer, but it behaves as if the function is called directly. And actually, the mechanism is an optimization that was invented after all the spectrum mitigations were done. So it works like a function pointer, but actually does direct function calls. But it does need architecture-specific implementation. I've seen discussions on doing this for ARM64, and RISC-V doesn't have it right now. One other positive thing is that you're doing your code in Z, not in assembler. The second option is the so-called static key, static branch mechanism, where you select essentially always between two implementations. You have an likely one and an unlikely one. And the unlikely one gets the speed penalty. Also, that's supported in RISC-V, and the code is also written in C, which makes this easy to handle. And on the right side, you'll see an example of this. And the option three, which I guess is the most versatile, are the so-called alternatives, where you are replacing one block of assembly code with a different block of assembly code. Of course, the disadvantage already is that everything needs to be in assembly, and also that the blocks need to have the same size, so you are adding NOP instructions a lot. And of course, there is also no compiler optimization, because you need to hand weave your own assembly. But the big advantage is that there is really no performance penalty at runtime, because you are removing one piece of code and moving in a different piece of code. And also, it allows multiple variants. You have the one block of code, and you can either put in this one, or this one, or this one. And you have essentially unlimited variants you can use. Okay, this is maybe a bit convoluted. It's like the memory type patch for both the SVBBMT code extension and also for the T-head D1, which essentially does different things, like there are different bits. And I'm nearly out of time. Also, alternatives are used to handle, for example, also CPU error. Also, interesting also is that the whole thing needs to be done for modules as well. But the module handler itself already has the finalized step where This patching can also be done for at the time the module gets inserted. And yeah, okay. So, and in conclusion, we have many code and future extensions, and rebuilding would lead to best performance, but we'll always need implementation variants, I guess. So yeah, and I guess I'm nearly out of time, and we could do a question if there are some. Ah, there's one.
Can we hope that platforms like the AllWinner D1 are just quickly forgotten about? Like, for example, with ARMv6 on the Raspberry Pi 1, it's mostly ignored, and because the Raspberry Pi 3 and 4 have like 100x times more shipments, so nobody has the old, well, Pi 1 not in particular, but I hope the D1 doesn't show up.
I guess the D1 is basically supported in mainline nowadays, and it doesn't cause overhead right now, because for everything we are doing for the D1, it's always just a second variant next to the standard extension. Like when we need to patch the kernel for SVPBMT memory types already, and the D1 is just the second block of code we are patching in if needed.
May I make a historic reference here, because Linux was first built on the Intel 8386, which is today, I think, unsupported.
But I think that's a more recent development. So I guess once all the D1s are broken, then I guess somebody will remove it. But I don't think we are losing it so early, because also we don't have that much actual RISC-V hardware right now.
Yeah. Well, a custom build shouldn't be a big problem, but I mean, when you have a distro that tries to support the D1 and the D2, for example, and the D1, for example, would be compliant with the 1.0 spec, then I would hope that distros would say, nobody uses the D1, so.
At least on the distribution side, the D1 causes no overhead at all. You can boot the Debian RISC-V port just fine on the D1 when you have a recent enough kernel.
Did they pick option 3 for that, or which option?
Sorry?
Which option to patch the kernel did they pick? Option 3 or?
Yeah, it's all alternatives. Like that was my project. So, and the idea always was we are implementing the standard extensions, SVPBMT and ZigBoom in this case, and thankfully the D1 does really the same as the standard extensions, just in a slightly different way. So instead of patching in a ZigBoom cache flush, we are patching in an T-head cache flush instruction. It's really the same, which is nice in this case.
Yeah, what I'm a bit worried about is that as you put in the alternatives to actually support a chip that is not spec compliant will open the door to hardware vendors to build whatever they want, because yeah, you can just put in some alternatives and then your chip gets compliant, and that I suppose over time will bloat the kernel code to make it quite difficult to maintain, let's say it this way.
Yeah, I guess that's really a discussion that's still ongoing, and different people have different ideas about this. And yeah, I guess we'll see how this develops. Also, there is the issue that companies are really allowed to invent their own extensions. They don't. They can create an invention X something, which means vendor something. And the discussion really is not finished on, are we allowing this in the kernel? But I guess right now it's shifting more into allowing parts of it. If it doesn't break, like the big thing always is that we should never break or cause performance penalties for these standard compliant chips. That's always the measure. That we are not making things for the standard course worse.
Yeah, so I would have another tricky question. because with all these whole lot of additional functionalities that the CPU can implement, I understand that might work better in an embedded world, like an embedded Linux world, but for the server space, I suppose if they really want to get there, they would need like to standardize much more what is expected, what should be supported, and how it should all work, like how the boot process should work, etc. So do you know if there are any efforts from the RISC-V community to work on that?
I think there are something called profiles, which is supposed to essentially describe a profile for, I think, servers or something, which then would encompass a set of extensions. But I think that's still all in discussion. And of course, as mentioned before, when you standardize on one bigger chunk of extensions, you are always pushing out everybody that doesn't implement this one specific extension you already specified and you wanted to have. So I guess the discussion for this will be long and tedious. Any more questions? No, there's no one.
Last one. And regarding the multiplication example that you were showing there, have you actually reviewed the compiler settings that OpenSUSE is using for its RISC-V 64 port, and whether there is something that we should be optimizing there?
Not really. Like, the multiplication was my example because I could show the issue in a very short piece of code, and the difference is like very visible. And I got the signal that, for example, Debian is using the RV64GC baseline, so multiplication, of course, is in there, and you never want to build a system without multiplication. It was like more like it made a nice example to show the difference. Okay. Thank you.